Welcome back to the Daily Decrypt. In a bipartisan move, U.S. Congress members have introduced the Protecting Consumers from Deceptive AI Act, setting the stage for stringent regulations on AI-generated content to prevent deepfakes from undermining public trust and national security. Turning over to Apple's latest iOS 17.4 update has revolutionized user choice in the EU by introducing a browser selection screen, sparking a massive surge in Opera's user base across key markets. How has this impacted browser competitions in the European Union? And finally, Tenable has uncovered a vulnerability in AWS's managed workflows for Apache Airflow service, dubbed Flow Fixation, which posed a significant risk by allowing attackers to hijack user sessions with a single click. How can organizations ensure their AWS environments are safeguarded against similar session hijacking vulnerabilities in the future? Up first, there is a new bipartisan bill that would require online identification and labeling of AI-generated videos and audio. So this is just a bill. This is not a law. It does have to go through the whole process, which I'm not going to get into, but I think it has a good chance of making it through that process due to the fact that the governors of our country aren't really hip to tech lingo. They just know that AI-generated content will hurt probably both sides of the aisle, and it will. And there needs to be labeling on this. This bill actually calls for the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or better known as NIST, to develop standards for identifying and labeling AI-generated content, employing technical measures like watermarking and digital fingerprinting. So to summarize that, the bill pretty much just calls for an organization to come up with how they would do it. The bill also outlines some potential punishments for not labeling AI-generated content. But again, it's mostly a suggestion at this point. The article that I'm referencing comes from Security Week, but I also found a similar article on PBS and a few other news sources, none of which provided a link to the bill. It was actually pretty hard to find, so I hunted it down and read through it and have linked it in the show notes below if anyone else wants to peruse through this bill. But there has been some movement towards labeling AI-generated content, which is absolutely necessary. So did you know there are actually other web browsers out there besides Google Chrome, Firefox, and Safari? Well, one of them is named Opera, and it's been around for quite a long time, though very underutilized. But now, thanks to the European Union's Digital Markets Act, or DMA, Opera has seen a huge surge of users, like up to 402% in France, with very notable rises in Spain, Poland, and Germany. And this is because the DMA requires a fairer choosing process for default web browsers. And what that means is that in Apple's iOS 17.4 update, they introduced a choice screen for EU users to select their default web browser. And this choice screen is displayed the first time a user in the European Union opens up their Safari on their iPhone. So by default, Safari is the iOS web browser. And now when users open up Safari, they're prompted with a screen that lists all competing web browsers, including Google Chrome, Bing, and Opera. And when it's placed in front of the user, they're going to navigate away from the ones that they're used to. They know they don't like Safari. They're kind of on the fence about Google Chrome and Firefox. They're huge names. Let's give Opera a shot. Now, the list is randomized, which is part of the DMA Act to allow fairness and transparency when choosing your default products. So maybe some days Opera's the first one, maybe it's not even on the top 10, who knows? But to be eligible for this browser choice screen, apps must meet specific criteria, including a minimum of 5,000 downloads in the EU's App Store over the last year. Besides Opera, Brave and DuckDuckGo have also reported spikes in installations following the introduction of the browser choice screen, which is indicating that there's broader interest among users in exploring alternative browsers. By emphasizing user choice and transparency, this update represents a significant change in how people interact with their digital devices. I'd be really interested in seeing something like this implemented in the United States. I mean, first of all, holistically, the EU is doing a lot to protect their citizens' data. A lot. And it's actually bleeding into how United States-based tech companies have to operate. So they're setting a good model for us. And this is just following suit with that. There's so many things that we can learn from the EU. But as companies grow in popularity and in success, like Apple, they gain more and more ability to control everything that the user does and sees and in what order, all the way down to the packaging. I mean, you open any package from Apple and you all are peeling off the same pieces of plastic in order. It's all designed. When you open it up, you all get the same screen. It's all meticulously designed, and they want to design it in a way that makes you happy and want to do things that they suggest, like use the Safari browser. Hey, it's integrated into iMessage. It's integrated into all this. And we, when it comes to tech, can be kind of like sheep. You know, it's the greatest minds in the world are designing these products, and I'm going to use them. I'm going to use them the way they want them because that's the way they were designed, right? Well, that cuts out opportunities for competitors, and competition is what stimulates economies and keeps products being their best versions of themselves, right? Without any competition, things are going to start sliding, standards are going to get lowered, etc. So competition is healthy, and the EU has recognized this by encouraging transparency and competition amongst web browsers. So more of that to come. And I'm hoping soon to dive more into the hardware side of it with the Right to Repair movement, which basically talks about how big companies like Apple have controlled everything, including the life cycle of the device. They want users to be happy with their device, so they try to take the controlling method, and they don't let smaller companies step in and repair those devices, and they don't provide replacement parts, which leads to a lot of problems. So more on that to come. I highly recommend you look into it. But for now, know that the EU is setting up things to help encourage competition and user transparency. All right, and our final piece of news comes out of some research done by Tenable that discovered a one-click vulnerability that could have been exploited to take complete control over user accounts on an Amazon Web Services service. The vulnerability is named Flow Fixation and was patched by AWS several months ago. The security company pointed out that its research has uncovered a wider problem. The vulnerability relates to AWS's managed workflows for Apache Airflow service and stems from a session fixation and cross-site scripting issue, enabling attackers to take over the AWS services web management panel and execute code or move laterally to other services. The most recent research by Tenable indicates a broader issue with cloud services sharing a parent domain, like AmazonAWS.com. Which in cloud services is very prevalent. But if you were to compare this to on-premises practices, this would be almost unheard of. So in order to best explain this vulnerability, I'm just going to read what Tenable said. By abusing the vulnerability, an attacker could have forced victims to use and authenticate the attacker's known session. This manipulation could have enabled the attacker to later use the same now authenticated session to take over the victim's web management panel. So even though it's been patched, the attacker could theoretically have already gained access to the web management panel and call on that access at any point. So again, from Tenable, this sharing leads to a scenario in which non-related customers host their assets on subdomains of the AmazonAWS.com shared parent domain. The problem is that some assets may also allow client-side code execution as a service. If we compare it to an on-premises environment, the scenario is like a cross-site scripting on a subdomain of a website you do not own. In an on-premises setting, you would not normally allow users to run XSS on your subdomain, but in the cloud, allowing this is quite natural. For example, when creating an AWS S3 bucket, you can run client-side code by storing an HTML page in your bucket. The code will run in the context of the S3 bucket subdomain you were granted and also in the context of the shared parent domain, AmazonAWS.com. AWS deployed a fix for these findings in September of 2023, so customers running the most current version of Amazon managed workflows for Apache Airflow are not impacted. It's also worth noting that AWS and Microsoft are tracking this and have made patches to the initial vulnerability. They aren't really seeing the additional risk in this new research, but Google is still unpatched for this vulnerability. They don't really think it's that important. And I'm not an expert on this topic, so I'm not going to be one to disagree with them. But key takeaways, patch your systems, and just keep an eye on this vulnerability. For more info and more specifics, you can see the article by securityweek.com in our show notes. That's all I got for you today. Thanks for tuning in. Happy Monday. Hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you tomorrow.